From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Bernie Sanders stayed mainly on the economy. Hillary Clinton went hard after Donald Trump, the best recruiter ISIS has, she said. Martin O'Malley, 52, said, let's hear from a new generation. Ouch. This hour On Point, we look at the Christmas debate and size up the Democrats' chances against the GOP in 2016. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did you see it or were you lost in the eggnog? What do you see coming next year in the general election? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington are three keen observers of this election season. Lisa Lehrer is national political reporter for the Associated Press. Lisa, welcome back to On Point. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Charlie Cook is editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report and a political analyst for the National Journal. Charlie, welcome back. Great to have you here as well.
Thank you much.
And Margie Omero joins us, Democratic pollster and a managing director with the bipartisan firm Purple Strategies, co-host of the podcast The Pollsters. Margie, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Full disclosure, your husband works for the Sanders campaign. Where do you come down, Margie?
I'm an undecided Democratic primary voter
okay.
in the swing neighborhood in Maryland.
Okay, that's exactly where you come down. Here's Bernie Sanders, Saturday night, closing statement, talking about the other party.
I think, frankly, maybe I'm wrong, but on our worst day, I think we have a lot more to offer the American people than the right-wing extremists today.
And the Democrats going for that. Charlie Cook, we're going to dive into this debate, but step back for a second. When you look at the demographics of this country, when you look at the GOP field, and we've seen a lot of them, when you look at these three, the two who are still really battling for it, the one who appears likely to come out, I think you have to say at this point, Hillary Clinton. How does the next year's contest look to you, Charlie? Is this a toss-up? Does it lean one way or the other?
Well, if you look at the national polls, it shows that Hillary Clinton would beat Donald Trump fairly handily, and she's in the margin of error of virtually every other Republican candidate, ahead by 1, 2, 3 points, behind by 1, 2, 3, tied, something like that. So that I expect we're going to see – I don't think Donald Trump's going to be the Republican nominee. I expect you're going to see a very, very strong general election. I mean, that I just don't think she is possible for Secretary Clinton to replicate President Obama's numbers among younger voters, among minority voters. And it's very difficult to see what group does she overperform Obama to sort of make up the difference. And while President Obama won by 3.8 percentage points, and you sort of extrapolate demographic trends to maybe it'd be 4.5% or so in 2016, but she is likely to underperform in a bunch of key groups. You know, you had African-American vote was at a higher rate than white vote for the first time in American history. That's not going to happen in 2016.
Lisa Lehrer, what are you hearing from the Republican camps, from the Democratic camps, when you step back from the drama of each of these debates? And we'll get into Saturday night. But who's feeling more bullish about their prospects and why, when it finally comes around to the voting, less than a year from now?
Well, I think Charlie's point is a good one. I mean, certainly the Hillary Clinton campaign is really focused on resurrecting that coalition that boosted President Barack Obama to victory. She spends a huge amount of her time on the campaign trail doing events focused at mobilizing Latino voters, mobilizing African-American voters, young voters, women. So from the Clinton perspective, I think more Donald Trump is a good thing. They see him as a motivating force to get their voters to turn out, not only Latinos and other groups who feel that that Mr. Trump insulted them, but also Democrats as a whole who perhaps saw their primary as sort of less exciting than all the than the crowded field on the Republican side. But they're also at the same time sort of recognizing that Donald Trump has tapped into something in the electorate, a sense of anxiety and uneasiness, not only about terrorism, of course, in the wake of the two attacks, but also about the economy. So I think Clinton's folks are trying to figure out how to capture that in a way that plays well with the kinds of voters they're looking to attract. So they want to see more Donald Trump, but they also a little bit want to figure out his secret here.
Bernie Sanders hewing to his economic messages by and large on Saturday night. But national security came in strong. Moderator David Muir at one point asked Hillary Clinton what she would say to Americans who agree with Donald Trump and his incendiary comments about Muslims. Here was Clinton's response.
And we also need to make sure that the really discriminatory messages that Trump is sending around the world don't fall on receptive ears. He is becoming ISIS's best recruiter. They are going to people, showing videos of Donald Trump insulting Islam and Muslims in order to recruit more radical jihadists.
Hillary Clinton on Saturday night, the so-called Christmas debate, eggnog time. Margie O'Meara, national security has surged up as the issue since Paris, since San Bernardino. What about Hillary going at Donald Trump as ISIS's best recruiter? How's that work within her party? How's it work beyond?
Well, I wouldn't look to that as some sort of sign about the primary. I mean, I think it's a real sign of how she and nearly every Democrat feel about Trump's really incendiary, off-the-wall, extreme remarks. And to be fair, a lot of independents, a lot of Republicans, a lot of Republican establishment folks, and some, but not all, of the Republican candidates in the field have criticized him. So I think it makes perfect sense to really call attention to what many see as incredibly reckless, both politically, strategically, and really shine a light on something that people find really abhorrent.
Lisa, the New York Times went out to fact check this assertion that they're showing videos of Donald Trump insulting Islam to recruit jihadists. Times comes back and says no proof of this. Donald Trump says, hey, she's playing fast and loose with the truth.
I mean, Hillary Clinton campaign says that there was a report saying that was going on. They also argue that, you know, more broadly, this is undermining efforts to build alliances with Muslim Americans here at home who can help out, you know, tracking down folks who are being maybe radicalized here in the States. They also argue that it undermines coalition building with Muslim nations who need to be involved in the international effort to combat the rise of ISIS. So they would argue that it has a broader impact as well, which is an argument other people have made,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I would just jump in to say the first sentence was perfectly fine. Because I think it is fair game to say recruiter-in-chief because, you know, when you're basically turning this into us against them, against the second largest religion in the world, 22% of the world's population, that is virtually driving people towards Islamic extremism. I think when she inserted the word video, she started getting into dangerous territory because that may or may not exist and doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence of it. But the first sentence, I think it was fair game.
ISIS best recruiter, that's a tough punch, and she went right at Trump. But on the other hand, talking about where national security stands now, Hillary Clinton, they're saying we're where we need to be. I'm sure we'll hear more about that from Republicans. Here she is Saturday night.
We now finally are where we need to be. We have a strategy and a commitment to go after ISIS, which is a danger to us as well as the region.
Secretary
and
Benoit.
We finally have a UN Security Council resolution bringing the world together to go after a political transition in Syria. If the United States does not lead, there is not another leader. There is
can
a vacuum. And we have to lead if we're going to be successful.
Senator Sanders
trying to get in there, couldn't quite at that point. But Lisa, what about Hillary Clinton saying we're where we need to be? This is very much in line with what we're hearing from President Obama lately. So, you know, stay the course. They're not a threat to the United States. Yes, they're a danger, but we're on top of it. How does that work in the Democratic primary? How does that work next year in the general election campaign?
I mean, you could practically hear the cheers, I think, in Republican campaigns and see the ads that they were already cutting, you know, with that line. It plays right into an argument that Republicans feel will be a good one in the general election, which is that, the Obama-Clinton foreign policy, they're going to try as hard as they can to tie her foreign policy credentials to that of President Barack Obama. She was, of course, his Secretary of State. Obama is very unpopular when it comes to foreign policy, but the problem for Hillary Clinton is she's right now in a Democratic primary. So she's dealing with a Democratic base that still has a pretty strong anti-war tendency and also that does approve of President Barack Obama, even if they approve of him a little bit less on foreign policy. So she's trying to navigate those cross currents, but that line was probably not phrased in an ideal way for her, particularly looking forward to the general.
Martin,
Tom, yes, please,
you know,
Charlie.
One thing that's, I think, worth noting is that you can even go back before San Bernardino, before Paris, and you almost had two Americas. And One America already put terrorism, national security, America's role in the world front and center. And they were called Republicans and conservatives. And Democrats, it was fairly far down the list. And independents, not real high up the list, closer towards Democrats than Republicans. Even after San Bernardino and Paris, that's still certainly the case, where among Republicans and conservatives, there's just this keen awareness, concern, fear, anxiety about terrorism that you get out of the ranks in of Republicans and conservatives, and it is not nearly as high, and you get into the Democratic side, and it's very, very low.
Well, I mean, I would argue, there was a CNN poll from about a week or two ago mm-hmm. that showed Democrats and Republicans equally concerned about terrorism, Republicans more concerned about than Democrats about foreign policy, phrased a little bit differently, and then the economy also in that top tier and everything else really below it. So I think at times when we have an acute worry about specific incidents like San Bernardino and Paris and so on, then you see more Democrats and more voters overall really concerned. You hear it in focus groups. I think ultimately when people go in the voting booth, if we're not talking about a certain current incident, right, then yep. I think those things recede. I think those issues recede. We saw it in 2014. We saw a lot of swing voting moms worried about ISIS at the time, worried about what was going on in a variety of countries. But then ultimately what they said mattered when they voted were the things that mattered to them personally.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Democrats in debate and the fundamentals of the contest, Republican versus Democrat, shaping up for 2016. Just weeks now before the Iowa caucuses, before New Hampshire primaries. Lisa Lehrer is with us from the Associated Press. Charlie Cook from Cook Political Report. Margie O'Meara is with us from Purple Strategies, pollster and strategist here, works with a lot of Democrats and more. What did you hear in the Democrats' exchange over ISIS, guns, Wall Street, the economy? Was Hillary Clinton right to call out and go after Donald Trump? Was Bernie Sanders? And who are you backing up there on that stage of three? Why? Last week, talking with Barbara Walters, Donald Trump saying he was sure, of course, he could beat Hillary in the presidential general.
I think I will beat Hillary very easily. She was a terrible Secretary of State. The world blew up around her. I'm leading in the polls, and I think I'll beat her.
In Iowa last week, Kayla Helmers, a Hillary Clinton campaign volunteer, attended an event where Hillary Clinton was and requested a message for her dad, a Trump supporter. Here's Clinton.
My dad is a Donald Trump supporter. Can you give him a message?
This is my daughter. She's
What's your dad's name?
Sean Starry.
Sean?
Yes.
I got it recording. Hi, Sean. I'm here with your daughter, and I hope you can see I don't have horns. And I really do hope that as this election goes on, you'll listen to your daughter. Thanks. Yeah. Bye.
So there it was, Hillary Clinton for everybody, including that guy, the father, who so far is for Donald Trump. Charlie Cook, take a look at Sanders versus Clinton here and the latest polling. What do you see? Do you think the needle was moved on Saturday night?
No. I think that, before the first debate start, there's certain views that are very, very, very fluid. And then every time you have a debate after that, it sort of fine-tunes how people perceive a race. But once you get to three, four, or in the Republican case, five debates, there's not a lot of change. But to be perfectly honest, sorry, I've got something in my throat.
Sure.
I don't think this race is terribly competitive because, once you get past, Bernie Sanders is ahead by a little bit in New Hampshire, behind by a little bit in Iowa. But if you gave Bernie Sanders 100% of the delegates from the Iowa caucus, which would never happen, 100% of all the caucus delegates nationwide, 100% of the New Hampshire delegates, 100% of the New England delegates, that would get him 36% of what you need to win. And his support is just way, way, way too narrow. And I don't see, after Iowa, New Hampshire, to be perfectly honest, other than caucus in New England, he seems to have nothing. and the national polls sort of reflect that. So I don't think this is a competitive race at all.
Lisa Lehrer, is there some magic Bernie Sanders can pull off in Iowa, New Hampshire that might change that? Or do you even agree with Charlie's analysis there?
I mean, certainly his strategists hope that if they can do well in Iowa, if they can win in New Hampshire, where, of course, he's from the neighboring state, they would get this magical momentum that would send them through the rest of the race. I think that seems a little far-fetched to me that would end up with a national win. So I agree with Charlie on this one. You know, he also has a sort of a limited appeal. He's had trouble expanding his appeal to other key parts of the Democratic base, African-American voters who play a huge role in South Carolina, the third voting state, Latino voters. Hillary Clinton's doing much better with those groups. But look, I think having a primary or a somewhat touch competitive primary, at least in those early states, benefits Hillary Clinton. It's certainly not something that her advisors are unhappy about. They were really concerned that this race would look, the primary race at least, would look like a coronation. That's not what you want heading into things, not only for, you know, perception issues, but also because it helps to practice, right? You're going to be heading into a general election. Mm-hmm. She's someone that's been out of the political fray for quite a while as Secretary of State and then, you know, on her book tour, writing her book. So they want her to get as much practice campaigning as possible before she gets into the general.
Of course, those following Bernie Sanders want to see this as much more than practice for Hillary Clinton. Let's go to our listeners, Kevin in Omaha, Nebraska. Kevin, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking the call, Tom.
Where do you stand, Kevin? What do you see?
59-year-old tradesman, got a tool on my hand as we speak,
yep,
and the phone. And I'm liking the looks of Bernie Sanders. He is a protest vote. Hillary just doesn't do it. I'm sorry, man. She just doesn't do it.
And what is it that's lacking for you, tradesman Kevin, at 59 years old with the tool in your hand? What's lacking in Hillary for you?
You know, you look at how they act, why they want to be there. Bernie Sanders looks like the guy who wants to be there to do good things for America. You know, Hillary, it looks like she wants to be the first female president. And I'm just kind of saving that vote for Elizabeth Warren.
Kevin, we've got it. That's not enough for you. Bernie's got the flavor that you're looking for right now. Let me get one more and we'll come to it, Kevin. And I appreciate your call. Claire in Madison, Wisconsin. Claire, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I would maintain that Bernie Sanders would have better numbers if he was getting more media coverage versus Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Tom, I called the DNC on Friday and I left a rather scathing message for them because I think it is rather disgraceful. They have clearly favored Hillary Clinton with their strategies, with this firewall mess. Having debates on a Saturday night, particularly this month's debate, is not giving the other candidates the kind of exposure they need with the public.
Claire, we've got it. And a lot of people have complained about that. A lot of people have noted that. Margie, your husband's there working on the Sanders campaign, so okay. But what about the fairness issue here? Many Sanders supporters have said, come on. And Martin O'Malley, of course, has complained bitterly about the number and the placement of debates.
Sure. So let me break apart a couple of these components, right? So the first is the notion that Claire brings up that there hasn't been enough coverage of the Sanders campaign. And I think a lot of people would agree with Claire. I think that even though Clinton is up considerably, as Charlie notes, in national polls, that's a bit of a trailing indicator that that the enthusiasm on the Sanders side has been a little bit underreported. I think a lot of people would agree. And those things can be true at the same time, right? You can have Sanders having huge crowds at his event, enthusiasm amongst his supporters, moving up at the same, you know, the same pace as Clinton in that sort of post Biden announcing that he's not going to run mode in sort of September, October, November. They're both moving up at the same time. So I think there is an argument to make that was being underreported or not reported as much as maybe the action on the Republican side. I think that's separate, however, from the debate issue. I think if the debate on Saturday was held on a different night, I don't think we would have had a different result in terms of which candidate would benefit or not benefit. And if you talk to the folks at the DNC, they would say that the debates, the Democratic debates, have had higher ratings than nearly every debate in 2008 and 2012. And that to be on broadcast as opposed to cable, then that usually means being on a Saturday. Republican debates on broadcast have also been on a Saturday. That's what the DNC's take on it. I don't think that the debate, as Charlie and Lisa also know, I don't think this past debate really changed things. So I don't know what different kind of schedule would have done differently for the debates. I think that's a completely separate issue from, you know, looking at sort of the full picture of what's going on the Democratic side as we look at the polling beneath the surface.
Plenty of complaining. Tom, yes, Charlie. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I first of all, yes, I agree with Margie. There's several issues here. And the first one is, though, but back in September, October, when you were seeing all the big Bernie Sanders rallies and the whole feeling the burn, that got a heck of a lot of coverage. And the problem is there was nothing to follow it up. And after Paris, he just hasn't had a whole lot to say. But to be honest on this debate thing, is it true that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the DNC chair, and the DNC has been in the tank for Hillary? Yes, of course it's fair. Is it true that they're scheduling these things for nights where the viewership would be low to help her, to minimize? Yes. Does Hillary Clinton really need that? No, because if you had compulsory national debate watching, the outcome wouldn't be any different, because Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley are not very good at this. And so this isn't having any – I mean, you know, yes, they're in the tank, but no, it's not having any effect.
But in the end, I guess good at this is in the eye of the beholder. Voters get to make that decision. The odd thing was, despite all the unhappiness over the timing of this, the Christmas cookie debate or eggnog debate, it was Bernie Sanders who had to begin sort of back on his heels because of these revelations last week that his campaign had looked into the data, to Hillary Clinton's data, through the National Democratic Party database. First question went right to that. Here was David Muir to Bernie Sanders.
You said of your staff that they did the wrong thing.
Absolutely.
So does Secretary Clinton deserve an apology tonight?
Yes, I apologize.
Secretary Clinton, do you accept?
Not only do I apologize to Secretary Clinton, and I hope we can work together on an independent investigation from day one, I want to apologize to my supporters. This is not the type of campaign that we run. And if I find anybody else involved in this, they will also be fired.
Secretary Clinton, he's apologized. How do you react?
I very much appreciate that comment, Bernie. It really is important that we go forward on this.
People appears ready to move past that, though. Bernie Sanders raised the possibility that Clinton people had looked into his database as well. We'll see where that goes. But they wanted everybody... basically wanted to move past that. David Muir put a kind of Sanders complaint to Hillary Clinton that she's been too close to Wall Street, too close for some Democrats to the business community.
But Secretary Clinton, I did want to ask you, the last time you ran for president, Fortune magazine put you on its cover with the headline, Business Loves Hillary, pointing out your support for many CEOs in corporate America. I'm curious, 8 years later, should corporate America love Hillary Clinton?
Everybody should. Be the president for the struggling, the striving, and the successful.
The struggling, the striving, and the successful. Muir put a similar question to Bernie Sanders. He got a laugh of his own, but with a different tone.
How big a role does corporate America play in a healthy economy? And will corporate America love a President Sanders?
No, I think they won't. So Hillary and I have a difference. The CEOs of large multinationals may like Hillary. They ain't going to like me, and Wall Street is going to like me even less.
Lisa Lehrer, that is not the way Clinton's campaign. They didn't in the 90s, and Hillary Clinton is not now. How's that working for Bernie Sanders? There's been a lot of disillusionment in the way the economy has worked in the last decade. Is the country ready for that straight up?
I mean, I think Sanders, because he took this no attack pledge, he wasn't going to do personal attacks at her. That's a big part of his brand. That's a big part of how he's running this campaign, no attacks. And that makes it really hard for him to, you know, make attacks and point out things that he finds problematic in her record. He also, as Charlie pointed out, he's not all that strong of a debater. That was an opening he could have capitalized quite a bit more. We had another moment that was telling in the debate was when he went after Hillary Clinton for being too much of a fan of regime change. She countered by saying he supported regime change in Libya. When the topic came back up later in the debate, he sort of said, well, you know, I kind of agree with her. It's complicated, and just kind of let it drop. So there were moments in this debate where opportunities were sort of open to him, and he just didn't seize on them. I think you do see this disconnect between his campaign and his aides and Senator Sanders himself. His aides have been much more willing to go a little bit harder. They were quick to try to turn this DNC data breach thing into an argument against the DNC itself, that they had been snowballed, when in fact, like, let's be honest about what happened here. His campaign stole information from Hillary Clinton. They muddied the waters on that quite a bit in a way that was pretty effective with their own base. But when Bernie Sanders got on the stage, he really wasn't doing that. He was just going to apologize. He doesn't want to talk about that. What he wants to talk about is income inequality. That may just not be – that kind of intense focus may just not be a winning argument in the primary.
I want to look at how that stacks up if national security stays at a high boil. Paul in Story City, Iowa. Paul, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
You know, 2016 is a general election. In a general election, historically, the electorate has been center-right. That means that extremes on the left and right are not very electable. Bernie Sanders – great candidate, but you can't be elected president in America if you call yourself a socialist. And virtually all the Republican candidates, with the possible exception of Jeb Bush, are too far to the right to be elected. So all this horse race stuff is a lot of fun, but when it comes down to November of 2016, I think the party establishment in both parties would say that a lot of these candidates are just not electable in a general election.
Well, so, but let me ask you, Paul. There's Donald Trump, who continues to be quite far out front on the polling numbers for the GOP. Are you presuming, with that observation, that he won't win the GOP primary?
I think somebody in the Republican Party will get him because he's too far, too crazy, too far out there. And yesterday, I saw George Stephanopoulos interview him on his show on Sunday morning. And he was so kind and so unpersistent about getting the truth out of that man. I wondered in my mind, what would Mike Wallace do to this guy? The press is too courteous to him.
We'll take it right there. Charlie Cook, thank you, Paul. So you're assessing this, Charlie, as Hillary's to lose, if I hear you right. I don't know if you're right, but I think that's where you're going. What about on the other side? Do you think it's likely, ultimately, Clinton v. Trump?
I think it's hers. I hate the phrase, but it's her. It is hers to lose for the Democratic nomination. No, I do not expect Donald Trump to be the nominee because I don't think his support is that elastic beyond where it is now. And I think that his voters, they're angry. They're trying. They're alienated. They're sending a message. They're not finished sending that message. But I think when you get into March, which is where meaningful delegates start getting selected and people start choosing a president rather than sending a message, I don't think you're going to see Republicans sticking with Trump. And even when you hear people, Trump people talking, and they'll send the strong message for a good while, and then you start seeing some little hairline fractures. Although I worry whether he's electable. Well, I'm not sure he's got the judgment. And when they start visualizing somebody sitting in that conference table in the Situation Room, flanked by the Joint Chiefs, and making tough decisions, they're not going to be going for Donald Trump. I think this thing's going to come down. I don't know whether the Republican nominee is going to be Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio. I'm pretty convinced it's one of those two. And we'll see from there. But no, I don't think Trump's going to be the nominee.
Margie, Hillary went after Donald Trump in a way that suggests she'd like to run against him. If it's not him, who's her next favorite or next couple of favorite targets?
Well, I would say Ted Cruz, certainly. He seems to be one of the candidates Republicans like least. And I heard someone say that everyone in Washington is unified in their dislike of Ted Cruz. I think he's going to have a lot of problems for the party.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Democrats in debate and the fundamentals of the contest, Republican versus Democrat, shaping up for 2016. We are just weeks now before the Iowa caucuses, February 1st, before the New Hampshire primary, February 9. These are just around the corner. The Democrats debated on the last Saturday before Christmas. And I don't know if you were watching, but my guests were Lisa Lehrer, national political reporter for the Associated Press, Charlie Cook with the Cook Political Report out of Washington, Margie O'Mero, pollster and strategist with Purple Strategies out of Washington as well. You can join us. How do you see the general election shaping up here? If it's Clinton versus Trump or Cruz or you name it, how does that look? If it's Sanders versus one of these Republicans, how does that end? National security, a big theme in debates lately. Here was Carly Fiorina just last week in Las Vegas going after, laying into Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration, saying they're responsible for the rise of ISIS because of their policies.
Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are responsible for the growth of ISIS because they precipitously withdrew from Iraq in 2011 against the advice of every single general and for political expediency. It's not these people up here. It's Hillary Clinton.
Republicans cheering that as she hung problems with ISIS around their necks. Of course, a lot of Democrats would take it further back to George W. Bush. But on the debate stage Saturday night, it was Bernie Sanders indicating that Hillary Clinton is too ready to go to what? Military force, too ready for regime change.
But it is very hard to predict the unintended consequences and the turmoil and the instability that follows after you overthrow that dictator. So I think Secretary Clinton and I have a fundamental disagreement. I'm not quite the fan of regime change that I believe she is.
And here was Martin O'Malley on Saturday night speaking several times to principal up there, saying Americans should never surrender their values, certainly not to what he called racism or fascism, to go after their problems.
We will rise to the challenge of ISIL, and we will rise together to the challenges that we face in our economy, but we will only do so if we hold true to the values and the freedoms that unite us, which means we must never surrender them to terrorists, must never surrender our American values to racists, must never surrender them to the fascist pleas of billionaires with big mouths.
Charlie Cook, I do not remember if I've ever heard that kind of commentary in a presidential debate. Once again, it just feels like new territory.
I guess it is, but it's not new for someone to be at fourth and very, very long yardage and throwing Hail Mary passes. I just think Martin O'Malley should be very pleased that there aren't any poll restrictions on getting into Democratic debates.
He's down at 1% in some of the polls going on right now. What about...
And Tom, you would probably be at 1% as well.
Oh, I'd like to think more like 10 or 20. Lisa, what about the national security debate on that stage? How would you describe the difference between the Sanders approach, the Clinton approach, if we look at those two?
Well, Hillary Clinton actually wants to take a more aggressive approach than President Obama. She would put a no-fly zone over parts of Syria. She would be more aggressive about sending special forces, troops in. She, of course, like the president, like Bernie Sanders, like just about everyone in this entire field, doesn't want to put American boots on the ground. She would take a more aggressive approach, certainly. Bernie Sanders is much more focused on having fewer U.S. resources devoted to fighting ISIS and finding ways to get more Muslim and Arab allies and nations involved in the fight. Hillary Clinton, of course, would say they're trying to do that, and it's harder than it looks, and it's not, you know, but that's sort of the argument. This is really about the Democratic anti-war base that still is frustrated and angry about the war in Iraq. They're frustrated and angry about Afghanistan, and so he's trying to appeal to that group. But this is an issue that isn't in his natural bailiwick. Bernie Sanders is running his campaign to talk about the wealth gap, to talk about income inequality, to talk about regulating Wall Street. This is not something that he is particularly all that interested in discussing. And you could see that when these questions came off, very often he tried to turn them back into questions about economic insecurity. This isn't a debate that he wants to be having. By contrast, Hillary Clinton is really comfortable in this arena. She, of course, was Secretary of State. This was something that she debated quite a bit in 2008 with President Barack Obama, where her vote for the invasion of Iraq became a big issue. So, you know, there's just a difference in what the candidates really do want to talk about here and the ground that they feel comfortable on.
Margie, step back for a minute and just look at these debates. There have been a lot of Republican debates. They've had a lot of attention, huge field up there, and as many have said, a kind of reality show feeling. And I don't mean that exactly dismissively, but there's just been so many dynamics of the interaction. And, of course, Trump comes from the world, literally, of reality shows. He knows how to play that. How would you contrast or compare the Democratic debates we've seen and the Republican debates for their tenor, for their the way they go at issues, for the messages coming from the stage, Margie?
I mean, there's no comparison other than the fact that they're both called debates. They're very little in common. I mean, the Democratic side, I mean, obviously there are differences between the candidates and there are policy differentiations that they all want to make. They have been almost entirely civil conversations. On the Republican side, you have so many candidates. You have, for most, the goal is to try and make it into a clip for the news coverage the following few days. So that means doing something crazy. That means using language like punching them in the nose or talking about somebody's face.
Well, best recruiter for ISIS is not bad as a grab for a soundbite attempt.
I hear your point. It's not the same as saying, "Oh yeah, you're a tough guy," like we heard in the Republican debate. I mean, that's an actual argument grounded in some policy, as opposed to a real personal attack. I mean, Chris Christie made it into the coverage by saying, "I can't believe we're talking about fantasy football," and that somehow caused him to have a bump, you know, for a couple of days. I mean, it's completely different. I mean, the only exception may be Rubio, who has tried to, you know, talk about policy in the midst of all of the other craziness, but it's really vastly different. And I think you also hear on the Republican side, I mean, again, I'm wearing the blue team jersey here, but a lot of exclusionary language. You don't get the sense that they're really interested in speaking to Democrats or swing voters and bringing them along, that you get the sense that they're really fighting over the Republican pie alone.
So we heard Charlie Cook earlier saying that if it's Hillary Clinton, he believes she's got a tough challenge ahead of her from the GOP. How do you see the dynamics of what lies ahead in 2016, Margie?
Well, I think nobody should take anything for granted. I don't think the Clinton campaign is taking anything for granted. I don't think any other candidate is taking anything for granted, or they shouldn't. We have a pretty divided, polarized country. And regardless of who the Republican nominee will be, whether it's someone who insiders and establishment and political watchers feel is damaged, like Trump or Cruz, or if it's somebody that the establishment decides is their best foot forward, someone like Bush or Rubio, whatever happens, we're going to have a pretty divided America. We're going to have a pretty divided election. We're going to have well-funded candidates. They're going to have every benefit in terms of their operation. They're going to have all the tools they need to communicate. So I think we should expect to be pretty politically divided. The other thing that may happen is, let's say it's not Trump, it's somebody else who emerges as the nominee, and then Trump may decide to run as an independent, or there may be movement to, you know, to have him run as an independent. And then what happens? That throws the race into turmoil once again. I mean, there are a lot of different ways that this can move and shake, you know, before we're done.
Marianne in Southern Pines, North Carolina. You're on the air, Marianne.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, it's been so interesting listening to all of this discussion while I was waiting to get on the air. And I just wanted to say, after, you know, voting as a Democrat for 52 years, it's been quite a ride. And I would have no problem at all voting for Hillary if she's the nominee. But at the present time, I am a Bernie convert. I made up my mind after the debate, the most recent debate. And I just completely support 100% his platform.
Marianne, take us into your thinking. Yeah. If you decided that after Saturday night, I don't know, eggnog in hand or not, what led you to?
All. Okay, ears, all ears.
Okay, all ears.
I totally support the fact that he is focusing on the economy, on tuition-free education for public colleges and universities, and also the fact that, you know, Hillary is more likely to take us, you know, spending more on defense and getting more involved in different conflicts around the world, which is why John McCain likes her so much. You know, remember drill, baby, drill, and bomb, 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 Iran. Well, those things didn't work out very well, did they? But overall, I came away, I really put a lot of thought into this, you know, my decision, because I've been for Hillary since 2008, although I voted for President Obama twice. But anyway, the thing is, around the world, think about this, around the world, voters are rejecting austerity, And I really believe and I have faith in the American voters. We will reject austerity, which is the Republicans will bring us to that. And only the 1% has benefited from the 50% reduction in unemployment and 11,000-point gain on Wall Street. And that's where I'm coming from.
Marion, we've got it loud and clear, and I appreciate your call. There's one clocking in after 52 years as a Democrat for Bernie this time. Lisa Lehrer, Bernie Sanders was asked how he would pay for some of what he's putting forward on Saturday night, including free college for all that Marion mentions there. How did he do with his reply to that, Lisa?
Well, he hasn't said how he would pay for a lot of these proposals. He doesn't want to, you know, that's something that Hillary Clinton has her campaign has really been hammering him on. Would he raise taxes on middle class taxpayers? We don't really have a full accounting for how some of these things, particularly his single payer health care system, would be paid for. His college plan would be paid for by taxing hedge fund managers and financial firms. But I think Mary, the last caller's point really speaks to something that Charlie was mentioning earlier, which is the difference in focus between the two party electorates. I have to say, as someone who's traveling the country covering Clinton and Sanders, I go to a lot of these town hall events, and these issues of terrorism, ISIS, foreign policy, they come up, but they come up maybe one of the questions out of 10 or two out of 10 are around those topics. The majority of this unease that voters feel on the Democratic side is really being channeled through economic issues, things like college, you know, the cost of college affordability, and also gun control. That's something that comes up an awful lot. And I think that's when they think about violence. Democrats think about violence and shootings. They're thinking much more about mass shootings at home.
Martin O'Malley brought up gun control in a roundabout way related to ISIS, but he turned it back against Clinton and Sanders. Here he was Saturday night.
ISIL videos, ISIL training videos are telling lone wolves the easiest way to buy a combat assault weapon in America is at a gun show. And it's because of the flip-flopping political approach of Washington that both of my two colleagues on this stage have represented there for the last 40 years. We need common sense. Gun
let's calm down a little bit, Martin.
Yeah, let's tell the truth, Martin.
I am telling the truth.
Let's... Martin O'Malley, who said, let's let the next another generation have its perspective. Even here, talking about his own 52-year-old age, they're going after both candidates on guns. Whoa, 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 you can hear from Bernie Sanders there. Jill in Fort Mill, South Carolina. Jill, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I think what's important to point out is that Bernie Sanders is at least bringing into the conversation a different perspective, which is encouraging younger voters to get out and get involved. One of the biggest problems we have in this country today is that there's only about 42% of the electorate that is getting out to vote, and those are on the two bases, on the D's and the R's. I'm a purple. I'm right in the middle. I'm a centrist. I ran for the U.S. Senate in the state of South Carolina in 2014, and I really see the problems that we're suffering because we're so stuck in the DNR rut. So even though Bernie may not ultimately be successful in what he's doing, if he can encourage more of our voters to get out and be participatory in our electoral process, that will begin to change the kind of problems that we're having with our politicians, quite honestly.
Yeah, Jill, it's certainly true that he's pulled out a lot of supporters and maybe new ones in their youth there. And still those poll numbers hanging in pretty strong for Hillary Clinton. And it's interesting, people wondering now in the general election what kind of role Bill Clinton will play. I have to say, she looks awfully strong and comfortable all on her own up there. But reports that he will play more of a role. And she was asked, they were all asked at a certain point, about the role of a president's spouse. Of course, Hillary Clinton once played it herself. But here's how she responded when it came to the possibility of her being there in the White House, this time with Bill in the secondary role.
I am probably still going to pick the flowers and the china for state dinners and stuff like that, but I will certainly turn to him as prior presidents have for special missions, for advice, and in particular how we're going to get the economy working again for everybody, which he knows a little bit about.
Somehow I don't picture Lisa, a President Hillary Clinton really picking the flowers or the china. But what about the Bill Clinton factor in the year ahead? What do you expect we'll see there?
Well, I think if she wants to pick the flowers in the china along with running the free world, that is certainly her right to
maybe,
do
maybe
so.
Maybe it'll be a break from all the
other nobody
stuff.
Wants to look at ugly China, I can tell you,
yeah,
Tom.
Yeah, okay,
nobody
okay,
wants
okay,
that.
Still.
Bill Clinton, I mean, I think we're definitely going to see – he's been sort of kept off the campaign trail until now. He's been doing a lot of private fundraisers, speaking to a lot of donors, raising money. We're going to see a lot more of him is the sense I get in January. He'll start doing more campaign appearances. He's a very popular figure. He's particularly popular in the Democratic Party. I suspect he'll be an asset for her in the primary.
Charlie, with all the uncertainties out there at this point, all the variables in play, do you see this as a toss-up? Or if you had to call it leaning one way or another now, which way, Democrat, Republican?
Well, assuming that Republicans do not nominate Trump, and I absolutely believe that they will not, I think it's going to be very, very close. I mean, the thing is, when you look, I mean, Democrats and liberals are going to vote for Hillary. Republicans, conservatives are going to vote for the Republican. You know, that's a given. And when you look at independents and moderate voters, it's very complicated. They see Hillary Clinton as smart and knowledgeable and competent and tested. And at the same time, they don't like her and they don't trust her. So I think it's going to be a very close general election.
Margie, what do you say?
Well, demographics, especially in a presidential election, it really favors the Democrat. And you're going to see an important role for women voters, no matter who the Democratic candidate is. So, you know, I think advantage Team Blue.
Team Blue says the Team Blue strategist. I guess we expect that. But Charlie Cook saying maybe a toss up. Lisa, what's your tip?
I'm going to go with Charlie here. I think it's going to be tight. General elections in this country are tight. We're a divided country.
All right. Seatbelts on, ladies and gentlemen. We are just about to head into the actual year. Lisa Lair with the Associated Press, national political reporter. Thanks so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Charlie Cook at Cook Political Report. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
And Margie Omero at Purple Strategies. Thank you, Margie. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.